Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast. On a Monday, we want to talk about USC's bowl preparations. It's starting to get going today, actually, here on the Peristyle Podcast. We want to talk about that with Dan Weber, beat writer and columnist for USCFootball.com. You can check all his work out, of course, on the site, USCFootball.com. And we have some questions from all of you. So if you have questions for us, podcast at uscfootball.com is our email, or if you want to call or text, you can do that at 424-254-9141. You're just driving around, not when you're actually driving, but you want to send us a text because you got some question for the podcast. 424-254-9141 is the number. Send it to us, and we will make sure to talk about it here on the podcast. And let's jump in with Dan Weber talking about USC getting ready to play Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. What is up, Dan? How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Trying to get ready to get back on the practice field this week, which is always fun, and see how they handle the challenge of both the time off and the time to get ready, and then the time to get ready for Ohio State. I think the combination of things, and it's interesting. Clay has an interesting bowl record, let's say. You've got the Wisconsin game and the Penn State game, kind of two different sides of the same coin. And then now you get a third Big Ten team coming off a pretty good year, a pretty talented team. And be very interesting to see how this USC team prepares for Ohio State.
Yeah, the bowl preparation, there always seems to be kind of, I don't want to say like negative connotation, or maybe that's the right word. Certainly when Clay took the job a couple years ago and there was a whole bunch of staff members that were fired and they really didn't utilize a lot of the practices and there was a lot of criticism. And then, of course, USC comes out and kind of lays an egg against Wisconsin. Last year, not as much criticism. They had more time to prepare. They had that week off for the Pac-12 championship game, so it was kind of like an extra week off, which, you know, they kind of like to do around this time of year. They like to take some time off. And, they started off that game really good, and then it kind of got – there was a lull for a couple quarters that were bad, and then they finished strong. So not a lot of criticism, I guess you could say, because, you know, they end up winning that classic Rose Bowl against Penn State. Now, you know, where other teams were kind of practicing early, like USC got the week off for Thanksgiving and for finals, and, really had some time where they just weren't doing much of anything. And then now it's starting this week. So this is the actual bowl week. Most of the practices that, you know, are closed, we'll be able to go to a couple this week. But we finally got the schedule, and we kind of know what's going to happen there. Maybe kind of give your thoughts on what you think of how this bowl preparation, these practices are set up. And everyone wants to know, are they using all 15 practices? Because that's always like kind of the number that people want. I don't even think that's the rule anymore. I think that's what used to be the rule. But what are your thoughts on all that, the bowl prep, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, they're coming off today will be the first day in 10 days, I guess, they're on the field. So that, you know, seems like a decent amount of time off, to say the least, after, taking some time off in the bye week. So it isn't like, they've been, pushed real hard. Obviously, the 12 games straight is something that everybody has reacted to, including Larry Scott, saying that'll never happen again. And after all these years where we were told sometimes that was just going to have to happen because of USC playing Notre Dame and flipping the game around, and it was just going to – there was just no way you could avoid that. And it turns out when they got enough criticism, they avoided it. And nobody is going to play 12 straight. So, welcome to the Pac-12. But USC has certainly made up, for having to play 12 straight games with their post-regular season schedule and getting ready for Stanford and now getting ready for Ohio State. So they should be fresh. They should have fresh legs, you know, like crazy. And they're going to get 5 days off, counting the travel day. Next week they're going to go Monday, Tuesday, and then they're going to get 5 days, basically 5 days off, including the day they travel to Dallas before they pick it up, pick practice up on Christmas Eve in Dallas. So I think they've caught up in terms of you know, being being fresh and refreshed and all of those things, and given the injuries the most possible, you know, time to get ready. We'll be interested to see tomorrow, do we have a chance with maybe, say, a Porter Gustin? You know, is he there? Will he be there? That would be, the one really biggest question, a possibility. Want to see what shape Andrew Vores is in after concussion protocol knocked him out of the Stanford game. But mostly I think we feel pretty good about the health of this team. And so now it's just a matter of getting ready. And will they use 15 days? They will not. And I think you're absolutely right. I don't think there is a 15-day limit anymore. I think a lot of people started using that because they would tell you that bowl practice is like a second spring practice. And so you get those, you know, the same number of days that you get in the spring, you get for the bowl game. But technically, I don't think there's a specific number listed. So looks like you could call it 12 or 13, not knowing exactly how they're going to, you know, do things in Dallas and whether they're going to, you know, consider them, you know, absolute practices or not. So more than certainly, you know, for the Wisconsin Holiday Bowl a couple of years ago, probably about the same as they did last year for the Rose Bowl. So whether that got them ready or not, who knows? I mean, last year at the Rose Bowl, they looked really ready in the first quarter and the fourth quarter. They looked really not ready in the second quarter and the third quarter. So, you know, was that practice related or what it was related to? But this is a team of contradictions. They and the season will give you a season of contradictions because, you know, here they are 12 straight games and, you know, busting their tail and not getting any time off and then getting a lot of time off. So this season, USC doesn't kind of take the middle ground. They kind of go all the way one way or all the way the other way, and we'll see how this plays out.
We will, and before we jump into some of the questions, I wanted to tell our listeners all about SeatGeek, because, you know, if you want to try to buy tickets to a sporting event, it can be complicated and confusing. There's a better way to buy using SeatGeek. It's the smartest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or if you need to find that perfect gift. Of course, it's the holidays right now, so gifts of tickets are always great. SeatGeek will help you find the best seats at the best prices, and it's fully guaranteed. Nothing quite like seeing the Trojans in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I do have the SeatGeek app on my phone, just opened it up. So if you want to go to the Cotton Bowl, tickets are starting at $78, so that's not too bad. But it's great when you go in and you can see like the view of the different tickets, and they price them out and show you what the best values would be, so you're not going to overpay for the tickets. It'll save you a lot of money. It'll save you time because it's really easy. You'll definitely get your most bang for your buck using SeatGeek because they do grade all those tickets. Like I said, all purchases are fully guaranteed, so you can shop for on SeatGeek with confidence. And so best of all listeners here on the Peristyle podcast, you're going to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code USC today. That's promo code USC for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And Danny, I'm starting to get emails from some of my friends. Hey, I think I want to go to the game. Do you have any lines on tickets and stuff? So I'm just sending them to SeatGeek right now.
No, I agree. I love, actually, just for the heck of it, love going onto their website and seeing what tickets are available at what prices for different games and kind of comparing, you know, the Rose Bowl or whatever to, you know, the Cotton Bowl, let's say. What, you know, just getting a sense of where all the seats are available, say, in the Cotton Bowl. And you know, it just, they give you such a, you know, great picture of the stadium and the deals that are, you know, hundreds of different sections and how many seats are available and whether it's a good deal or not such a good deal and all that. I think it's fun to do that. Even if you're maybe not going to the game, you might just do it for the fun of checking everything out.
You mentioned some of the storylines, Dan, for practice. One we want to hear about is Tyson Helton. Hey, did you take a job in Tennessee? Are you going to stick around? Or do you through the bowl game? So we haven't really got any kind of details on that yet, at least as I've seen.
No, I mean, it makes sense. Tyson had a lot of experience at, a couple of years at Western Kentucky for Jeff Brohm's very good staff where, Western Kentucky finishing in the top 25 a couple of years in a row and poor Tennessee just trying to figure out, how to get out of their own way. And, probably averages 5 to 6 times as many people at home as Western Kentucky right next door. He coached at Alabama, Birmingham, and Cincinnati, a lot of places where you would fit right in to the kind of the Tennessee situation geographically, recruiting-wise, all that kind of thing. So, makes a lot of sense. He gets a lot of credit for having been the quarterback coach with Sam Darnold for 2 years. I think that's a big plus. And so I think it would make sense to be the next step. And it's a Tennessee staff that has a young, defensive coordinator out of Alabama is going to be the head coach. And it's interesting when you look at the new head coach of Tennessee, much of what they tell you about him was his years coaching at Hoover High School, a really, really good high school program in Alabama. But he's not that far removed, from being a high school coach. So kind of an interesting way. And if they go with Tyson, they're going to be going with a different approach to things at Tennessee. And I think he'd make a good kind of companion coach with, I think Phil Fulmer said interim AD, Phil Fulmer, former coach, won a national championship, said they wanted to go with discipline, and that's where they went with Jeremy Pruitt. And I think Tyson would be a nice, counterbalance to that. He's, really positive, upbeat, good guy kind of coach, and it might be good to have a staff where you've got, one guy as the hammer, and the other guy is the hugger and the handshaker and all that. And I think that might be something that works, but I haven't heard anything yet definitively on it.
Yeah, so it'll be nice. Practice today is closed, so we can't go check it out and see what's going on. But tomorrow we'll be back at practice in the afternoon, and we'll get a lot of updates. Should have, some newsy stuff happens in a couple of weeks when you haven't seen the team and haven't been able to speak to anybody. So last time we got Clay on that, Cotton Bowl conference call, I think that was the last time. So,
none of the coaching. I mean, really, the T. Martin stuff hadn't even. There were thoughts maybe, but nothing. Definitive. And then you hear that. Well, there has been some talk, and all of that. We haven't really been able to catch up with anybody. They're recruiting with the early signing date and all that. That changes kind of the way the end of the season schedule works for the coaches and for us. Tomorrow'll be fun. I don't know if we'll have enough time to talk to everybody we want to talk to, but there'll be a lot of talking going on.
Yeah, I think there will be. Let's see. Let's jump into some of these questions, Dan. We got Tarek. He said, do you feel that Stanford showed Daniel Metoyer-Bebe is fully healthy?
No, I don't think he's ever going to be fully healthy this year. I don't think that. I think there's some. I think there's always going to be some tightness in that hip flexor. He doesn't have the ability to quite just completely open up at this point. But I mean, I think he can be fully healthy as a functioning tight end, as a blocker. I don't think there's any question that for that that close area, quick footed movement that you're talking about with blocking, I'm just not sure that he's ever going to be able to completely open it up and run completely free and loose I think it's going to take a little more than that. And I just, it just hasn't been enough time, probably, you know, to get that worked out this year. But I mean, he's functional, and you know, if I had to put a number at it, you know, let's say in terms of getting down the seam and that, maybe 95% at the top, 90 to 95%, which is pretty good. And comparing to, you know, comparing him to other tight ends, and not just USC tight ends, but just in general, that still puts him as pretty, you know, pretty good ability to get down through the seam. But comparing him to where he might be had he been 100% all year, he would be behind that. He wouldn't quite be the kind of threat that he was by the end of last year, where he was really tough for teams to handle with their secondary. I mean, he could really get behind safeties and run away from linebackers.
But a question from Tom in Hermosa Beach, my town, Tom, where we're neighbors. He said, I tend to agree with Dan Weber on nearly everything, which is why I was shocked when I heard him after the UCLA game. How could he criticize our defensive backs when Jack Jones tipped the ball away that bounced off Emon Marshall's helmet? Is Dan expecting an interception on every play? Did Jones use the wrong fingertips to deflect the ball? Was Emon supposed to, quote, head the ball into a different direction? Sure, the defensive backs have had their problems this year, but that play wasn't one of them. Tom in Hermosa Beach. I'm trying to remember what play that was.
It was a deep middle. I think what I would like to see is a little more body control by really good athletes. I mean, we're talking about Jack Jones followed Emon Marshall as the number one recruited athlete in the entire country in back-to-back seasons. So you would like to see, when that ball goes up in the air, and this is what I would like with all the defensive backs, the ability to finish plays at the football. And I just being there. For example, the Stanford game, a perfect example, where you had guys in double coverage bracketing receivers, you know, ball thrown in between them, perfect throws, but not having the ability to explode to the football, to both A, locate it, and then B, play it. And I just think those guys are too good athletes to have to be desperately fingertipping the ball when they're in position. I mean, and I think, you know, that's what I'd like to see more of. If that ball hits your fingertips, I'd really like you to be in a position to be able to make a play on it and not, you know, not do what, you know, we've seen done in Hail Mary situations where they touch it, keep it alive, don't kill it. And that's, again, I think that's practice, and that's developing the sense of where you are, where your man is, where the ball is, and where the play is that you can make on the ball. And I just think if you're in position to make a play, I'd like you to make a play and not be tipping the ball and keeping it alive without you having more control over the play that you make on the ball. So, yeah, that's I do expect them. When you've got guys bracketing a receiver and in better position than the receiver, which happened in both the UCLA and Stanford games, I expect the USC kids to make that play. Now, if it were flipped around, I'd expect the other team's defensive guys to make that play if you're in those kinds of positions. And if you're the kinds of athletes that Jack Jones and Emon Marshall are, I really expect you to make a play and not allow those completions. And those were big plays. And I think they have to finish plays. And that's something we're not seeing as much of, despite the secondary, you know, with all the interceptions they've got, you know, one of the, you know, better teams in the country in terms of interceptions. And still, I think they've got more chances than they've maybe taken advantage of.
All right. Thanks for that one, Tom. Let's go. We got Lamar. He just said he's from the desert. So somewhere in the desert, there's Lamar. Hey, Dan and Ryan, I look at a lot of NFL football, and I notice the plethora of talent in the league from Southern Cal. from Juju making plays as a rook on my Steelers, Everson Griffin on the Vikes, Tyron Smith with the Pokes, Clay's injured. So you're talking about Clay Matthews there. Robert Woods being the best receiver on the Super Bowl contending Rams.
Although I think Clay made a play yesterday. I think he got to the quarterback on a play that became the big interception, as I recall.
Oh, nice. So he's back then. Okay. I didn't watch that.
I think he was back yesterday.
That was like a double overtime game too. So apparently it was pretty good. I did watch the Rams. Like the Rams had lost that tough one last night. That was a really good one. He said, Robert Woods of the Rams, just to name a few. Who do you think is having the most impact to their team this year? And do you believe that the Trojans retained the juniors that left early last year, if the Trojans had retained the juniors that left early last year, that they would have beaten and made the playoffs this year? Lamar in the desert. I think Buck Allen had 2 touchdowns yesterday, too.
That was on 6 carries. So, very impressed. He caught a really nice pass, and he had a power run up, inside, and then he had a nice sweep where he just got inside the pylon. So, really happy for him. Poor Baltimore, nobody can beat the Steelers at the end of games anymore. I mean, they got 3 straight, game-winning field goals in the last second, which is what happened to Baltimore yesterday. But I was real proud of Buck. I thought he did a really nice job as the backup tailback yesterday.
And Nickell Robey Coleman, I think his name is now. Like he had some nice plays in that Rams.
Well, I thought they missed some opportunities. I think the crew, who was it? Was it Jim Nance and Troy Aikman? There were a number of plays yesterday where Nickell was one-on-one with Nelson Agholor and basically ended up getting singled up with him and making plays against Nelson, or Nelson and make plays against. And I thought they had an opportunity to point out that these two were playing, 2 USC kids playing on USC's home field after having gone against each other for years in practice, were getting a chance to do it in a game that really mattered. And I didn't hear them pick up on that.
Yeah, I think it was Joe Buck. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
It was Joe Buck. I'm sorry, it was Joe Buck. And I wish they would have picked up on that, because it happened over and over again. It was pretty cool to see that. You know, you got to give Nelson credit, man. He's really become an awfully valuable player for a team that's playing as well as anybody in the NFL. And Nickell was holding his own and. There are a lot of good stories, USC stories yesterday. If you wanted to know what the biggest one is, I think it might be a guy who didn't play yesterday, Robert Woods, and just his effect, attitude-wise and athletically on the Rams. I think he changes the nature of the Rams team and the Rams offense, and I think it was interesting to me that they were talking midway through the season this year. You would hear the whoever was calling the game saying, "We talked to the Rams coaches," and they didn't realize Robert Woods could run like he can run. You know, and we're all thinking, "Gosh, you know, was nobody paying attention to Robert in college, or was nobody paying attention, you know, to Robert in high school, or what he was doing in the CIF track meet and all that kind of thing?" But I guess that happens in the NFL. But I think Robert is really. I think his attitude, as much as anything, has infused, and obviously they get a new coach, and they figure out some things that they can do with Jared Goff that he can do. He's not going to have the greatest arm and all the other things maybe that you need to be a quarterback, but they've done nothing but smart things with Jared Goff. And I think part of that was what Robert Woods brought to the table for the Rams this year. So he might have had as much of an impact as anybody. But as you say, yesterday you just watched. The only thing missing, obviously, not only was Robert missing, but, poor Juju was having to sit out. And I think he kind of got a bad deal until he stood over Vontaze Burfict, And did he have to, he gets a crack back, kind of blindside, and even if you don't know it's Vontaze, it's hard to not take that shot. what's a guy supposed to do? Maybe nowadays you just have to screen the guy who doesn't see you coming, and you maybe have to take the blow instead of delivering the blow, or do you got you do a crossbody block as opposed to driving through with your helmet? But as a result, and Juju, the surprising thing was obviously the stare down and the standing over and all that, which is just, you know, every once in a while that might have happened, but and some of that I think Juju has a sense of the dramatic, and I think he knows that he's kind of half, you know, just playing around and posturing because he's not a bad guy at all. But I think that caught him, and so he ended up getting suspended yesterday. And luckily for the Steelers, it didn't cost them because they kind of missed him yesterday, and they still made the comeback when they needed it.
Yeah, that was I didn't have a problem. Like, the block is like, okay, I guess it's technically illegal, but – and you just – I mean, you would hear, like, other teammates, other people in the league. I don't think anyone had a problem with that because they know the way Burfict is, and they all were saying karma and stuff. They felt like – yeah, it might be a little dirty, but he does that all the time. So it's nice to get him. I thought the hit was fairly clean. It was like going with the shoulder. It wasn't like he was some helmet-to-helmet thing. He just couldn't see it. But, yeah, if he just would have walked away and just, like, let him lay there, it would have been way better. I think you have it's a better effect, too, but standing over. But
no,
the weird part is, like,
I would have loved it if he'd have tried to pick him up and help him up. You know,
yeah.
That would have been even better. Here, yeah. Vontez, let me help you up.
But for him to get a game for that and the way Gronk went after that dude's head and he only got a game, yeah. It just didn't seem like – that just seemed one was way worse than the other.
Yeah, I think he just got – he got penalized because of the nature of the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game. I mean, they were going to penalize somebody or two coming out of that game and because they got so much negative publicity, you know, for the way that game went, because it sounded like the whole world was watching. And they didn't like the way that, so he got hammered for that, but he learned a lesson. You can't do the standing and posturing and staring and all that. It's not a good look, and it's not who Juju is, and so he really shouldn't do it. I mean, maybe the Steelers a little bit, although mostly the Steelers just hit you and walk away, and they don't, you know, do a whole lot more than that, and It's been perfect for Juju. Yeah, he made a big impact, too. You got to give him credit. He's done things. I don't think even we who saw him, I think he's showing us a quick-footedness that I don't know that we always got a chance to see a bounce in his step. I mean, we knew he was strong, and we knew he was decently fast and tough. But he's showing a skill level, and maybe part of that is at this level, you know, you get a chance to do that, and he's, you know, on a team with the best receiver in the NFL, so they can't put their attention to Juju, which, you know, in college he did get, you know, the focus of opponents' defenses. Now they can't possibly do that to him, and he gets more of a chance to run free a little bit, and he's also showing us something, but it makes you realize what a run of receivers USC has had over, you know, these last 5 or 6 years. It's just pretty amazing.
The one last part Lamar wanted to know about guys if they didn't leave early. Yeah, I think if Juju Smith-Schuster and Adoree Jackson were still on this team, they likely beat Washington State and they're in the playoff. But I don't know. What do you think, Dan?
Any one of them. I mean, really, if the big guys don't leave, that, you know, say Damian doesn't leave, just one more offensive lineman for that game, you know? If they'd had one more guy healthy, that might have been enough. Any one of those things, I think, yeah, definitely. I mean, just the difference of having Adoree as a senior running back kicks. I mean, you screw up the other team's whole kicking game because they don't know what to do. His ability in a game like that, you know, to put him in on offense when they needed a, you know, they needed a boost. And they win that game, I think. And, they go into Notre Dame unbeaten, and that changes everything, too, because, you know, then they realize that the Notre Dame game is important. Like this year they went into Notre Dame, you know, stunned at the fact that was a really big deal game, which, is kind of hard to imagine, but that was the case. And I don't think that would have happened. If you had just had Adoree and Juju along for the ride, yeah, are they in the playoffs? Absolutely. I mean, without even a question, they're in the playoffs. Sam, no matter what other issues he had, doesn't have that difficult start at the beginning of the season when he's trying to figure out who are my next go-to guys, and looking around, and one of them, Tyler Vaughns, is on the bench. Can't throw the ball to him if he's on the bench. Daniel Motrababy not ready to go. So, yeah, and you could have thrown the ball to Adoree, too. So they would have had – this would have been a whole different season. But, you know, other people can say the same thing. But this would have been a whole different year for USC if those guys would have stayed.
Jeff, the math teacher, says, hey, guys, happiest of holidays to you. Thanks, Jeff. You as well. Thanks for all you do. Two questions. One, I read in the paper that Larry Scott said something like, parity is the ultimate measure of success. Did he really say that?
Well, it's his ultimate measure, because if the more, let's say if you got a 12-team league and now, let's say 9 or 10 of them maybe are slightly better than they were, that's how you get four-year extensions of your contract and more than $4.2 million a year salary, because everybody is like, boy, this is working well. And a number of those teams don't think they're going to the playoffs, so they could care less about whether USC is going to the playoffs. That's USC's problem as far as they're concerned. But Ryan actually came up with that thought when I told him before the game we were going to get a chance to ask Larry. And so I asked Larry, because Larry finished up he did a press conference before the USC-Stanford game, and he finished up talking about how much the league has come up in terms of the weaker teams and the more facilities and more money for coaches and things like that. So he basically ended up with in parity, great. And I asked him, would you rather have parity or a playoff team? And he realized, okay, now I got to answer, because he's trying to make the point that USC should be considered. It was very late to try to make that point. He was trying to say USC overcame the 12 games without a bye. They overcame having to play Friday night game at Washington State, which, of course, the Pac-12 required USC to do, and how they had to play Notre Dame, in the middle without a bye, when Notre Dame took a whole week off of class and had a bye to get ready for that game. So he's trying to make that point. And so it was the time to ask him, which would you rather have, somebody who's got a shot at the playoffs or somebody you got to make the case for to the rest of the country? Please, please pay attention to us. We got some good teams. And he finally did say he'd rather have parity, because that means all 12 teams are doing better, even if the top team is handicapped. As a result of that, he'd rather have the 12. And, if you're a politician and your, contract and everything else depends on getting all those teams to back you, then you're gonna go that route. And that's the route he went, yes.
And then second one, he said, hypothetically, if USC retains all of its players and coaches for next year without any NFL defections or staff changes, would you consider them likely favorites to make the 4-team playoff? Jeff, the math teacher.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely favorites to make the playoffs. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, if Sam comes back, if Sam and Ronald come back, even though maybe you'd like to see some things done differently coaching-wise, that team would probably be very difficult to miss out on the playoffs, I think. I would find it not likely that they would miss out on the playoffs. I mean, let's face it, they had kind of an ugly year this year and almost made the playoffs. I mean, and you could actually make a case. I mean, nobody really deserved to be in that fourth spot in the playoffs this year. You could have been flipping coins, and one of the coins you would have flipped would have been USC's. I mean, you know, everybody had reasons not to like them for the playoffs, for that fourth spot. So, you know, if you thought, yeah, they, you know, they were certainly in consideration this year, even if, you know, they ended up eighth. Next year, absolutely. Yeah, no question.
All right, thanks for that one, Jeff. Let's go to Frank. If USC were to beat Ohio State by a substantial margin, do you think it would make a lasting impression on the College Football Playoff Committee as far as weighing the Pac-12 versus the Big Ten teams next year? Same question for the Stanford-TCU game. Thanks for all your hard work and this year to bring some clarity USC season. Fight on from Frank.
That's hard to know. I mean, I think they don't like to be embarrassed, no question about it. I mean, for example, I think the reason they – and it's easy to say, well, it's the SEC or whatever. I think the reason they put Alabama in as number four is they didn't want to be embarrassed with people saying, wait a minute, this team you guys were voting first most of the year and second at the worst, you dropped them out of the top four? Are you kidding me? Were you that dumb? Did you not really get it? Did you think Alabama was any good? And then all of a sudden they play one good team, one relatively decent team, Auburn, who already had a couple of losses. And they've got a pro-style quarterback that nobody else Alabama had faced had. And they get beat because they can't really defend them that well. And yet they didn't want to admit that. See, they didn't go into any of that kind of analysis. They didn't go into an analysis that said, let me see, this is probably one of the weakest years we can remember in the SEC, but let's put two SEC teams in the playoffs. Yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, we'll do that. No, they don't do that. They didn't want to drop Alabama out, and this was the way they could do, you know, they just said they didn't. And they, you can forget arguments about strength of schedule or what did you do in the bowls. Try to remember what happened in the bowls last year. I think they got embarrassed last year, didn't they, the SEC? So what? Nobody cares. They'll do whatever they want. Now, USC might be enough of a different if they had a big, you know, if you had a romp and you start raising hell. The problem is, who would raise hell for USC? Would anybody say anything? Not that we know of. We might, you know, Ryan and I, but who else is going to say anything? You know, say, yeah, see, we, you guys, you know, weren't paying attention. You didn't, you know, nobody will. No. And it's hard for the Pac-12 even to do that because the more they talk about USC, the more the other 11 get unhappy again, and they don't want to be unhappy. So it's really hard for the Pac-12 to make the case for USC. So, I would guess if that happened, they still might not pay that much attention to it if they thought they could get away with it. If they didn't think they could get, for example, if ESPN jumps on the bandwagon, but let's face it, the ESPN doesn't make any money from the Pac-12. So therefore, you know, I mean, watch ESPN Sports Center now, and you see like seven NBA games when you're thinking, gosh, isn't this a college football Saturday or whatever? And they, and you realize, oh, wait a minute. They've got a multi-billion dollar contract with the NBA. So they're going to feature NBA or whatever. But they're never going to feature the Pac-12 in a way unless USC is to the point that they were under, you know, Pete, when they're winning national championships and going, you know, 30 or whatever, four straight games without all that kind of thing. And you force them to pay attention. But otherwise, it's hard, I think, for them to make the point. It's hard when you're playing your best, you know, their top games in the Pac-12, starting at, you know, 10:30 on Friday night in the East Coast. I mean, how do you make those people pay attention to you? They don't have to. They don't care.
Yeah, they certainly don't. And it's a problem for the conference. It's a problem for Larry Scott. And I think USC needs to push back more on the conference and Larry Scott to make sure they get fair treatment.
Yeah, they got to say more no. They just have to say, like, they send you a schedule that says you're going to Washington State on a short week on a Friday night, and you say, no, we're not doing that. Yeah. No, that's bad for the conference. It's bad for us, bad for our athletes. Figure out a different way. We're not doing that.
Before we jump, finish the rest of the questions, I wanted to remind everyone, you got to check out Trader Joe's. Go to TraderJoe's.com. They've been a sponsor for the Peristyle podcast for this whole football season. We've been loving it. It's great. My wife and I love going. There's a new one that opened this year in Hermosa Beach that we can even walk over to. And, of course, at USC and the University Village, they got a, you know, where the dorms are and these awesome dining hall. You have a Trader Joe's for all the guys. You know, the guys and gals can come down from their dorm room or whatever and pick up some snacks or whatever they want at Trader Joe's. So pretty special. It wasn't like that when I was in college, but it's a really neat thing. I know it's done really, really well for Trader Joe's, and I think the USC students love it, having it be there. They've been in business for 50 years, and like I said, my wife and I love going. If you want to pick up some wine and cheese to kind of sit outside and enjoy the day, or you know, pick up a six-pack of beer or something, if you want to do any kind of tailgating work, I know a lot of people talk to us about heading over to Trader Joe's for that, but you can also pick up the staples, everyday stuff you would get, you know, anywhere. You get great prices on eggs, milk, bread, butter, things like that. So it's been great. We love working with Trader Joe's, and make sure you go check them out. They don't have a Twitter. You can it's Trader Joe's on Instagram. So if you're an Instagram person, you can go there or go to TraderJoe's.com. And Dan, I know you're a fan.
I'm anticipating that for the holiday season, they get in my, I'm going to keep saying this till I get it, my corn pudding that Trader Joe's specializes in. And I don't know, I saw the other day somebody, there was a, my wife was checking out recipes for the holidays, and one of them was a recipe for corn pudding. And he said, well, it's not quite as good as Trader Joe's corn pudding, but it's really good.
Nice.
So anyway, I just keep throwing that out there because I'm really looking forward to them getting the holiday supply of corn pudding in.
Nice. All right. We got a few more questions. We'll let you go. Oscar wrote in. Hello, guys. This question is for Dan or Ryan. With all the head football coaches fired by universities this season, Fox, ESPN, SI, etc., always had a list of replacements or hires for each school. My question is, why wasn't Clay Helton's name ever mentioned, or at least rumors that some school X had contacted him? He's got a record of 27-9 as a head coach, good recruiter, seems to be liked by everyone, so what gives? Also, when Pete Carroll was a coach, was there ever another university that almost pried him away from USC? Guys, have a wonderful holiday season with your family. Fight on. Beat the Buckeyes. Oscar.
Yeah, Oscar, I think you answered your own question there with I don't think we ever heard a single Pete Carroll might go to this school or that school. You figured, hey, you know, where is up, you know, from USC at that point. So I think that's one of the reasons. I mean, I could have made the case that that say if you're Auburn and Clay Carroll had been an Auburn football player and Gus Malzahn leaves, if I'm Auburn, maybe I, you know, just feel out the possibility very quietly with somebody like Clay. But other than that, not a lot of places make any sense. I mean, they just don't. I mean, it's hard to come up with a school and say, oh yeah, that'd be a good fit. I mean, there might be some schools that you could say, I mean, I don't know that there's any other than, you know, if you want to throw Alabama in there and say, well, that's not a lateral move. And that's, you know, that's because of Saban. But is there a school out there that's not a lateral move for USC football coach? I don't think so. And I don't think there's a sense of Clay having any interest in the NFL, as we knew Pete did. Which is why the rumor will, you know, work so much, you know, with Pete and the NFL. But so I think that's the reason. There's just not another school that makes sense, and there's no NFL interest. So you know, I just don't think you're going to hear many Clay Helton rumors.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Pete Carroll, I mean, he was a West Coast guy already. There wasn't just going to be anything where he could go. If Clay Helton was like jonesing to get back, you know, go back to Auburn or something, and you know, that was going to come open, you know, maybe something like that. But I think, you know, a lot of the USC fans that are kind of frustrated, I don't think people are looking at Clay Helton yet as he's 27-9 and is like the mastermind of what's going on here. I think a lot of people just feel like it's USC. I mean, that's why he didn't get voted Pac-12, you know, coach of the year by the other coaches. Some people just think like, yeah, the USC has talent. They're just doing whatever. I think for Clay Helton, if the NFL or like an Auburn or someone else would like try to make a run at him, it would probably take a couple more years of continued success, a playoff run, things like that. Then I think he'll start to get more credit. It's just, he's not getting a whole lot of credit these first couple years, fair or unfair. I don't think he is. He will going forward. But like Dan said, even if he gets a lot of credit and he makes some kind of run and he's, you know, winning Pac-12 titles and you know, New Year's Six bowl games or winning playoff games, it's still like, okay, it's hard to go get USC's head coach. Like, people have tried to make a run at Nick Saban, but you're like, you know, you're at Alabama already. It's hard to go unless there's like a real specific reason, you know, why. It's not like, you know, Willie Taggart at Oregon. Yeah, that's a great job, but it's, you know, it's like a top 20 job. It's not a top 3 or 4 job like USC. So if someone from your home state or whatever comes calling, that's something you can listen to. You know, you can listen to. When Lane Kiffin was at Tennessee, you know, that's usually a pretty darn good job, but he had a chance to go to USC. So it's like there's, you know, maybe there's like 1 or 2 schools that could make a run or something like that. But to me, I just think it's a combination of USC is not the school usually plucking head coaches away from for other college jobs. And Clay Helton's probably just not getting a lot of credit yet.
No, I think the coaches and the coach of the year and the coaches voting, I think a lot of them just look at USC's roster and they just say, well, if I had that roster, you know, and that's easy to do. And you hear every single one of them talk about USC's talent and all of that. So for a USC coach to get that kind of recognition, you got to really make a championship run, a national championship run. I don't think there's any, you know, anything less than that. And, you know, everybody might like you, you know, as a person and all of that, but they're going to say, well, yeah, it's USC. They ought to do that. So, you know, you're comparing yourself with 4 guys, you know, Howard Jones and John McKay and John Robinson even and Pete Carroll, who were, you know, national champions and put programs on the field that people compared everybody else to. And that hasn't happened yet, you know, for Clay. And so that would have to happen. And even then, like for John McKay and Pete Carroll and John Robinson, it really pretty much takes an NFL, you know, offer. And for Clay, that just doesn't seem to be in play.
Yeah. We got Tarek with an M. Tarek with a Q. He says, with USC's limited staffing in comparison to other blue blood programs, I don't think we can afford to have subpar coaches who also don't recruit well. I'm specifically referring to Coach Bradford. The defensive backs have struggled all year, and it's not due to talent. Coach Bradford doesn't like to address the media, and I've heard you all say that he isn't interested in recruiting. Can you explain what he's good for? Seems like we could find someone that can recruit better and do a better job developing talent. Tarek with a Q. A little, kind of harsh there, Tarek, but okay.
Yeah, Tarek, I wish we knew a little bit more of all the ins and outs of the recruiting part of that, what you just said. It's really hard. You know, first of all, they're not allowed to publicize that much of what they're doing. And that's a hard part of that, you know, that equation. And there is a sense that maybe USC is a little understaffed in terms of the support guys, although they seem to be working pretty hard at it. There's an interesting thought about whether those people ought to be able to do so much of the work that the coaches just finish things off, and that they shouldn't have to be spending all this time, and they can't really now with the earlier signing date. They've made it hard for coaches to be away and be recruiting when they're coaching. So, you know, you may see more of a move where the coaches coach and the recruiting staff sets things up, and then the coaches finish it off. I mean, Clay, for example, I think is really, really good in home. A guy that can sit down with a family and really make a good pitch. He's just so sincere and so, you know, believes in USC as a school and a program and a destination. And I think he does, a really good job of that. And the head coach has to be able to do that. But as far as the recruiting, component of assistant coaches going forward, I don't think we know where that's all going to be. As far as the on-field stuff, I mean, that you can look and say you are as good as the players you produce and their production on the field. And that's kind of a mixed bag. They do have a lot of interceptions. So they're one of the better teams in the country intercepting the football. And yet, they've had a lot of misses too. I mean, this is a team that hits a home run or strikes out, and they're giving up a lot of yards, and they're giving up a lot of big plays, and there have been probably more busts in coverage than you'd really like to see with a relatively veteran group. So, you can certainly make the case that you'd like to see things improve there. And if you said, where would you like to see the improvement more at what position group, that one might be the one you'd say, well, this is the one I'd like to see, first. And what does that do in terms of the coach that's responsible for that group? We'll see. I think that it still has to be played out in terms of the staffing and where does this go. And I know last year they were very happy and talked a lot about we basically kept the staff together and brought in DeLon McCullough, who was just a terrific hire, and how important to have that kind of ability to keep the staff intact. Whether that's still going to be the theme of this offseason, I don't know. After a season of some really inconsistent production at different position groups, but you make a strong case, and we'll see how that plays out.
One last one from Neil in Manila: is there any chance Darnay Holmes transfers to USC? He's talking about the five-star freshman defensive back at UCLA. Sad because he was about to commit to USC until his dad forced him to commit to UCLA for Demetrius Martin, who is no longer the DB coach of UCLA. That's Neil in Manila.
Yeah, I'm not a big transfer guy in terms of, if somebody wanted to go to UCLA, I think that's fine. And if the family, made sense, that's fine. And I would think there are better places to go and find, the next player that you need in the secondary. It would be, I'm just not somebody who really wants to think about or encourage or hope for transfers. It's just not what a program like you, I mean, there may be some special circumstances, but for a program like USC, I'm just not sure that transfers are necessarily. Every once in a while, junior college kid makes absolute sense, but I'm just not sure that's the way a USC needs to go.
All right, Dan. Well, hey, great stuff. Appreciate you coming on and chatting about the Trojans, and we will look forward to seeing you out there at practice tomorrow, and we'll get more scoop what's going on this week.
I'll look forward to it as well. This is going to be an interesting week, so stay tuned, everybody. Maybe some of the answers to your questions will emerge by the end of the week.
We will see. Hopefully that does. All right. Well, that's Dan Weber. Make sure you check him out on uscfootball.com. Thanks to SeatGeek and Trader Joe's for sponsoring this episode of the Peristyle Podcast. And we thank all of you for tuning in and listening to our little show. So we'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much for tuning in.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.